for the Morning Show with Greg Berg podcast. This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. It's time to head back to school, and we have two special guests today from the Kenosha Unified School District to share everything you need to know to make sure your children and grandchildren are ready to go back to school. Our first guest is Dr. Jeffrey Weiss. Dr. Weiss is a graduate of UW Parkside, Carthage College, and Cardinal Stritch University. He began his career in education as a substitute teacher in KUSD in 1993 and has held a variety of teaching and leadership positions before returning as superintendent in 2022. Welcome, Dr. Weiss.
Thank you very much.
Joining him is Tanya Reuter, Chief Communications Officer for KUSD since 2012. She's a member of the Leadership Council who supports Dr. Weiss and the district to ensure that students, staff, and families are well-informed and knowledgeable about events, information, and opportunities in the district. Welcome, Tanya.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
So I just like to do full disclosure for anything where I have kind of special insider knowledge. So I just like to point out I spent a lot of time in KUSD schools as a professor of education at Carthage College, and we place our future teachers in KUSD classrooms. KUSD often chooses to hire them after they graduate. And I've worked at several other universities in other states, and I have to say this is an unusually great relationship between a college and a school district. We feel really lucky to be here, and it's always good to run into alumni, both in the classroom and now in the superintendent's office. So that's very exciting. The other thing is my own son attended KUSD schools from K through eighth grade when we moved out of the district. But still to this day, because of online gaming, all of his best friends are from his K through 8 days at Ebsola and Bullen. And he's about to start his sophomore year in college, but he got his great start in KUSD. So I am not unbiased. I just like to point that out at the beginning in case anybody wonders. So Dr. Weiss, you're relatively new on this job. Tell us a few things that you have found interesting or surprising about KUSD so far.
Sure. Thank you. And thanks for having me. One of my goals last year, one of my big goals last year was to get out into the schools and to the community to learn as much as I could about the district. Because although my three children graduated from Kenosha Unified. And although I had that experience from the parent side of things, it's important that I see this another side from the superintendent lens. So last year I got a chance to get out and visit our schools, visit our teachers, our community, and three things really stood out to me as part of my getting to know KUSD goal. The first one is how incredibly caring our staff is. When I went out to all the schools, we have our ASPs who greeted our families at the door. And while they're the first face they see, our ESPs, our educational assistants who work with some of our most vulnerable students, are incredibly caring. Our teachers, oftentimes I'd see them stopping and helping a student in need and being a shoulder for the student to cry on or hug. And our principals, our administrative staff, making sure that they do all their decisions are based on the interests of kids, best interests of kids. So that the incredibly caring staff here was one of the things that I learned about KUSD. The other one is the strength of our practices. Our instructional practices really are research-based and we're doing the right stuff. from our special education department to our curriculum department to the instructional strategies our teachers are using. They are research-based practices. And this is my 30th year in education, I'm going into my 11th year as a superintendent now. So I've been to a variety of districts, and the instructional practices that are in place and institutionalized, just the way we do work, really are top notch. And then finally, our school improvement planning process is another one of our strengths. And the school improvement planning process really involves a group of teacher leaders and the principal getting together, looking at our data. It's a collaborative process to identify what work needs to be done next and for which students. And the practices that are in place here in Kenosha Unified, really, with the school improvement planning process, that really stood out in my travels. This is something that we can build on, because I believe that you get the best results when you build from your strengths. And those really are three areas that I do see as our strengths and areas that we can build on.
I think that's really useful for listeners to hear, because you've worked at several other districts as a superintendent, so you have something to compare it to. This isn't your first rodeo, so to speak, right?
Right.
Yeah. Is this the largest district you've worked for?
It is. Mm-hmm. I was an assistant superintendent in Racine for a number of years. Well, Racine is smaller, mm-hmm. But as a superintendent in Richmond School District, which feeds into Arrowhead, it's a K-8, mm-hmm. with about 500 students. And then South Milwaukee has 3,000 students. So mm-hmm. My background in Racine does help, mm-hmm. you know, being part of a larger organization and working in a larger setting, an urban mm-hmm. setting. So that's been very helpful.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's really interesting to hear this perspective from coming from outside of KUSD. So what are some new programs or policies this school year you'd like to emphasize for families who are listening?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, my goal is to build on our strengths, and building out from our school improvement plans has been an area that I've been focusing on. And my goal on building out from that strength is really to create coherence and alignment from the school board floor to the classroom, boardroom to the classroom. So there's been several things that we've done already to start creating that coherence and creating that really focused, focused vision and focused plan of work. So back in when I first came on in November, at the November board meeting, or maybe the December board meeting, we started a book study, the school board and I, and it was on, the title of the book was Coherent Governance Core, Governance Core by Michael Fullan and Campbell Davis. And based on that work, the school board developed their moral imperative. And the moral imperative really is a reboot of a mission statement or a vision statement that is not only emotional, but it can be measured. It's empirical too. So developing that was really a key first step, because that gives us that creates what our goal is for the district at large. And I'll share that with you in a minute as I walk through these other parts, or maybe I'll share it right now. I guess that'll make more sense. So what the school board unanimously voted on for our moral imperative is all students will have an equal opportunity to prepare for college and or careers with highly qualified teachers in an educational setting that is resource rich, welcoming, and safe. So that we can take that statement, that moral imperative, and then really start breaking it down to see how well we're doing. And then that will lead into our district goals, into our school improvement plans, and really give us give the school improvement plans a target. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of those other targets we have in place. So developing that moral imperative was a key first step. The next step was to create our growth of a graduate, we call it. One of the things that we know is that test scores are and always will be very important indicator of our success. But there are other factors that are important as well, that I would say are equally as important as our test scores. So we convened a group, turned out to be over 200 people. We had staff, students, business leaders, community members, to help come up with our growth of a graduate. What are those skills that our employers look for when they hire somebody? So when we talk about the whole child, this is that other piece. This rounds out the full picture of what we want our graduates to be. And at our July board meeting, the school board voted on and approved the following, competencies or following characteristics of what our graduates should be. The first one is a continuous learner. Then a continuous learner is self-motivated. We're looking for that intrinsic motivation to keep on wanting to learn. The next one is an active reflector who is aware of themselves and the impact they have on others in the world. The third one is an effective communicator, somebody who is able to express their ideas, to inform, influence, and motivate. The fourth one is a critical thinker, able to analyze information from different sources and share different perspectives to create solutions. And then finally, a community contributor is a person who is working for the overall good of their community. So those five characteristics, really, that came out, like I said, out of that 200 or so people we met with, multiple meetings during the spring. And we're going to be working on this next year. We're going to take some time and figure out, how do we measure those? How do we put some metrics around those competencies to see how we're doing? And then making sure that our district, we have goals at the district level. We have district goals. Mm-hmm. And making sure that our district goals are public, are transparent, that we measure them, and that we have them on our website, and we promote how we're doing with our district goals. So this is our, we did that this past year. We shared our, they're on our website now in the area of student achievement, finance, our fiscal goals, fiscal responsibility, and the engaged and effective workforce, and family and student engage and community engagement. Those are our four district goals, and we put metrics around those as well. And they all lead into then school improvement plans. So that's when I was talking about, how do we create that coherence from the boardroom to the classroom? Those are the mechanisms, those are the structures that we've put in place so that we do have very clear alignment and coherence in all everything that we do.
Great. I think those are really clear of, and maybe to some people, obvious things that students should leave with. But I will tell you that, having been part of many planning processes that, like the one you just described, you do that. It is harder than it sounds to be able to measure what you mean by something like a critical thinker. And so just being able to agree on the goal is a really big thing. So I think this is a really great place to start. I need to pause for a moment just to reintroduce. You're listening to WGTV HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Unified School District's back-to-school information for 2023 is archived at WGTV.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So what are some dates and events that are important for families getting ready to go back to school? This may be a question for Tanya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some really important dates. In particular, we have our first day of school for 4K through 12th grade. Other than Frank, who already started back in early August, is Tuesday, September 5th. Our 4K students will start on Monday, September 5th. We do have some open houses that had happened this past week. So we have our elementary open houses took place on Tuesday, August 29th, and our middle schoolers got to meet and greet with their teachers on Wednesday, August 30th. So the school year is really ramping up. And so we're looking forward to seeing those students walk through the front doors again early next week when we return to school.
Great. So after the first hectic weeks of school are started and everybody's in the right classes and everything else, what are some plans and projects that KUSD is looking to work on in the coming year?
Yeah, I would say a lot of it revolves around some of the things that I just spoke about with our growth of a graduate and our school improvement plans. One thing that I would just add is that our teaching and learning department has been working with the committee and identified some key high leverage strategies to help move our school improvement plans forward, and again, it's all focused on research best practice for instruction. It's really not flashy. I wish it's not flashy stuff. It's more of inside education type of work that we're doing, but that's those are the things that I'm excited about, that we're going to be moving forward with a very clear and targeted instructional strategies and putting some processes in place to make sure that we're continuing to look at our data and continuing to go through our continuous improvement cycle to make sure that we're doing the best we can for students. So that's one thing. And Tanya, I know I'm missing something important. Is it coming into your head? Is there something I forgot?
Well, we're going to continue to update all of our strategic planning pieces. So we had some of our pieces that we had met throughout the year, but we had some of the pieces that we were still working towards. So in our student achievement pieces, we met some of our goals, but we had some pieces that we're working toward with goals of 2024 and 2026. So we're still working towards those pieces at this point.
Right, absolutely. And that gets to the continuous improvement cycle and continuing to review our data, not just what the outcomes are, but how we're doing on the input side. How are we implementing the strategies that we know work best, and how we can support our educators to implement those strategies are the things we're looking at.
Great. So this isn't a fun question, but, you know, we've all read about the budget shortfalls and the challenges and the tough decisions that you've had to make. So what are some of your priorities and goals as you approach budget challenges?
Right. One of the things that we are working on right now is our right-sizing committee. We know that we have buildings and schools that are below their ideal capacity. And when that happens, it becomes less efficient to run schools, and it costs more money to do so. So right now we're engaged in a process of examining all of our facilities, taking a look at our 10-year enrollment projections. Not just the numbers, but where those schools, where the population growth in our district will be. And then making sure we will have a recommendation. Our goal is to have a recommendation to the board by December on potential school closures and what that would look like. Just because we have had, there's a nation enrollment, the population and school enrollments are down nationwide. And we've seen it here in Wisconsin, there are many, I think it was 75% of the districts are going through declining enrollment. Mm-hmm. And we're not immune to that. So we have to make sure that we are being as efficient and as responsible as we can with the.
I mean, depending on the past experience of people listening, we all know that school populations go through sort of boom and bust periods, right? Yeah. So there was a big building boom in the 60s and 70s to accommodate all of the children of baby boomers and going on from there. And we had a big decline in population starting in 2008. And this is like, as a person who teaches at a college, this is all of our big concerns right now is the college age population is smaller than it has been. So part of what you're experiencing is, like you said, it's quite common across the state and really across the country. Yeah. There's no place where there's a growing population of children, really. There may be a handful of districts, but.
Yeah. And what we saw really is in 2012, we saw Kenosha Unified, the enrollment, I think from like the early 90s. It really peaked in 2012. And then since then, we're back to levels that we were in the 90s. So it is cyclical, and school funding is based mainly on student enrollment. So with fewer students, there's less funding, less funds for the schools. So.
Right. Well, that's not, as I said, not necessarily a fun topic, but I appreciate your honesty, and I'm sure the listeners will too. So somewhat related, I saw an announcement on the website that says KUSD participates in free lunch for all at certain schools. So I think there's probably some confusion among the public about why you don't try to determine individual eligibility anymore and just allow free lunch for an entire school population. And it is most of the schools, it looks like. I didn't note which ones were missing, but it's quite a long list. So can you explain this policy a little to clear up some questions people might have?
So that one, actually, it is all of our schools this year.
It is all of them. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So actually, in the past, what we had done, I believe we started smaller many years ago, and then we had expanded to about 13 schools, and now this is just district wide. And so that's the announcement now, is that we're district wide. And maybe the confusing part is that we still talk about the forms a little bit in there as we talk as we talk about Title I. And so there is still the piece of collecting that information for Title I purposes, because we still have other pieces tied to Title I. So there's some eligibility pieces within there, and a lot of that happened to tie back to food services, because families would submit a form to say, I qualify for free and reduced lunch, and then that allowed us to show Title I for Title I funding purposes. It allowed us to show where our families fell within there. And then with this CEP program, though, we're allowed to say all families are going to receive free meals, and that's breakfast and lunch. And we just had a healthy enough food services fund that we were able to say we're going to do this district wide instead of making families fill out a form anymore. And so we went that route instead. We chose to go this route. This is not anything to do with COVID. It is not the COVID meals. This is the true KUSD regular lunch program, regular breakfast program, and it is just free to all families. The only thing that they may receive a charge for would be if they don't take a meal, but they still take a milk. You have to take the whole meal in order for it to be free, or they will be charged for the milk.
Oh, how
if
interesting.
You take a milk only, you will see
okay.
a charge.
Yeah, so twist. I've had this question asked of me so many times. It's like, why could you do this? Because my son ended up going to two of the schools that had free lunch before. And, you know, clearly we could afford to do it. He's an only child. And, you know, my husband and I are both lucky enough to be fully employed. But part of it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there's an expense involved in just determining who is eligible and who's not. And so there has to be somebody there either collecting money or checking to see if students are eligible. And you don't need that person anymore. That's one thing. But the other thing is then it just kind of eliminates the sort of haves and have-nots in the schoolroom, the lunchroom, I mean. So I don't know. Do you have any other further thoughts to add, either of you?
I mean, we have, part of it is you have some school populations where when the population is at 95% free and reduced lunch, having to make them fill out a form when you know that you're at a 95%
right.
population. It just it just doesn't seem necessary. And again, this year it came down to the fact of the matter that we had a healthy enough food service balance that we were able to do this district-wide.
Yeah.
And we actually do have a pretty disadvantaged population district-wide.
Mm-hmm.
And so this just seemed like an equitable thing to do when we already had 13 schools on the CEP program. And so instead of offering it to 13, we chose to do it district-wide. Just one more thing to offer to families when inflation is very high, to take one less stressor off of our families when they're already trying to do so many different things and have so many balls in the air. It's just one less thing for them to have to worry about if they choose to. If they still want to send a lunch to school with their child because they have different needs, allergies, whatever, they can still choose to do that as well. We're just trying to make it a little bit easier for our families in that way.
Yep. Yeah, and I would just add, the food lunch is a self-sustaining fund. So it's not that, or it should be a self-sustaining fund, and ours is self-sustaining. So money that is in, and it's called Fund 50, can't be moved to the general fund to pay for instructions or salaries for more teachers or whatever. It's really designated for food only. Mm-hmm. So making sure that all, and I would get, and I did get calls last year, people concerned that they were not getting lunches because the form was late and kids weren't, they were getting a alternative lunch. They were still eating, but it was an alternative lunch. It wasn't the district lunch. So this eliminates a lot of, we want to make sure kids eat at the end of the day. And this helps us do that without creating undue burden.
Yeah. And it just sort of eliminates a whole bunch of issues that principals would have to manage in those buildings too.
Right.
So that's one thing. Okay. So the other thing that I'm sure that a lot of listeners are aware of is that nationwide, there've been a lot of challenges to curriculum and books and some other issues within schools that just even in our neighboring district of Waukesha, there were some issues around teachers and what they could and couldn't say. So I'm just curious if you could explain to listeners, if parents or community members have questions or concerns about materials in use, what is the process that the district uses to follow up on their concerns?
Right. I'd say the first step would be to contact the student's teacher and begin with a teacher. 90%, it's been in my experience, I was a former curriculum director and dealt with book challenges in the past. But 90 to 95% of concerns could be handled by contacting the student's teacher. There is a policy, and we do have policy on handling book challenges, challenges to instructional materials. We have that on our website. We have it in district policy. And that really is, I'm going to focus mainly on the process because the process is key to bringing concerns up about any materials. So we do have those, the school board did approve a policy on that. We have policies, and should there be a challenge, we follow the policy to make sure that concerns are heard and that we're able to address those concerns when we're able to.
Thank you. So I know this is a little bit out there, but you know, everyone talks about the cost of gas, and I don't know if I personally always notice how much more expensive diesel fuel is, which is what school buses use. So I'm just curious whether this has had any effect on transportation issues. And the other part is I see signs all the time looking for school bus drivers. So has this been an issue for KUSD, and how are you dealing with it?
Yeah, I would, Penny, I'll start and then you can jump in. Because I started last year in October, I imagine any issue was ironed out by the time I got here. But I can say that in other districts across the state, there have been, it's mainly been on bus driver shortages. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's something that we see in just about every sector is, you know, staffing shortages and trying to find qualified people. I know that other districts in the state, I'm not aware of any issues in Kenosha, But I know other districts in the state have had to reduce bus routes, have had to pull in emergency bus drivers. I just saw the state of Wisconsin passed, and this is mainly for districts up north, but they just passed a bill that allows school board members to volunteer to drive buses. So it is an issue. I'm liking it more to staffing shortages. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't live in a, there's not a, we're not living in a bubble here. We're impacted by those forces across the state and nation. I would say the cost of diesel that's one of those expenses that we, our transportation budget would take a hit in that area. And that does impact the general funds. So I don't know, Tanya, if you have anything else to add to that, or.
Yeah, that's probably one of our major contracts that the board has to approve. And that is reviewed and updated. And we happen to contract right now with First Student. We go out to bid for that, of course, when that comes up. And First Student does a great job. Our director of transportation, Jeff Marks, is an amazing human being who does his best to figure out routes and reduce the number of routes where he can, if possible, to try to make it as efficient as possible so that we can work with the number of drivers that First Student can possibly hire. Last year, we did see a few issues, but it was minimal. It was probably more impactful, if anything, during the day with field trips having to be limited versus impacting our routes to school. Like I said, they work really closely, he and the manager over at First Student, to make sure our kids get to and from school, which is our top priority. And then those field trip pieces, though, they can get pushed sometimes. And that's unfortunate, but it just depends if drivers aren't available or if somebody's sick and they just don't have a backup. And that's just the reality right now. And I don't think that is something unique to the bus driver situation. I just think that's part of hiring in America right now. And I just think there's a shortage of everyone everywhere at this time, and they're just not immune to that at First Student either.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. So like even for families who send their kids to school on Kenosha Transit, so that would not have, you know, be affected directly in the same way. If you have field trips, it is really hard to schedule them if you can't get a bus. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But I was just curious about it because I'm sure other people have wondered as well. Just a moment to take a break to say that you are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Unified School District's back-to-school information for 2023 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So there were some big investments in technology during those first 2 years of COVID-19. So how are you leveraging these technologies now that people are back in the school buildings? You know, in what ways have operations changed or become more streamlined? How are kids learning differently? What are some new things that are going on?
You know, when I hearing that question, it really it made me reflect that there's so many things now that I think we just take for granted as part of the everyday classroom coming out of the pandemic, that before we were scrambling to learn on the fly. Google Classroom is one, and having everything in one platform, the ability to have video meetings and video conferencing, and our the Promethean boards that are set up. I know that it's really kind of, I have to think back to what it was before, before the pandemic, before COVID, to be able to do a comparison, because some of those new technologies, they just get so quickly integrated into what we do and how we operate that it, don't even think about them because it's just the way we do business now. And off the top of my head, those were just a couple. with you know, the Google Classroom, and the more, I'm sure there's greater communication home now because of all the technology that we have. Parents can't make a meeting. I know that I will do a Zoom with them, or, you know, some sort of video conferencing as a way to connect. I'd really have to sit down and and think about it and write a list to come up with everything that's changed since that time. So,
yeah, we've even come as far as, you know, using translation services when we have to do an IEP meeting with a family. If we don't have somebody available, it's not like we have to reschedule. We can use online services, and we've all just become more comfortable with using these tools available to us, where I think if you went back to early 2020, that was, like Dr. Weiss said, that was us scrambling to figure out, like, how does this even work, and training everybody to make it. And now it's kind of more second nature, where it's, you just hop on and you do it, and we're used to it. And our students are definitely more second nature. Like, this just comes to them now, and it's something that they're used to getting on the computer and finding and searching and researching. Or teaching us how to use it.
I know that one big change for us as parents was when our son was a freshman, we had to go to the high school to do parent-teacher conferences, and the spaces between the rooms were so enormous. You were like panting by the time you got to the next appointment. And now the last ones were all on Zoom, and I think they are just going to continue to do them that way because more parents can attend. People aren't running around in the halls getting lost and having to like pant their way there because they have to run to get from one end to the other. So that's like, I think that's a big innovation. And then the other thing that I do all the time, and I know that my students who are student teaching in the schools do this as well, is it's so much easier to get somebody to be a guest speaker in your class. Like you can just call people up from all over the world, literally. And if they're free at the time you have class, they will join you on Zoom and just share with the whole classroom. So I think that's kind of a great thing.
That is.
Yeah. And I mean, I can share from the lens of our family engagement programs. You know, families are busy, and I think especially after COVID, they found value in making time for family a true time for family. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we rolled out some new programs, and we were able to do them in a hybrid fashion. And so those families who like to come into our buildings and make that connection with their school and see the staff and, you know, get that reminiscent smell of elementary school or whatever it might be, can come in and do that. But then those families who like to go home and be in the kitchen and do the program from home with their children can also do that. One great one that we did is Soup with the Soup. So the kids are reading with Dr. Weiss, who was a great team player, put on little mouse ears for us while he read If You Give a Mouse a Cookie with the kids, and the parents are in the background cooking soup that we provided to the families. And it was this great interactive program, but it was because we had taught everybody how to use these tools, and it was this great thing. And we had hundreds of people online with Dr. Weiss getting to meet him virtually online on a cold winter's night, making soup and having like a warm, fuzzy evening. You know, like those mm-hmm. are the things that we look at as a silver lining that came out of what was not a great time in anybody's world, you know?
Yeah.
And just to put a plug in, we'll be doing that again this winter. So,
yes.
Oh, that sounds really fun. So if a parent or community member is listening to this and would like to get involved in helping their local school or the district, what are some opportunities for them, and who should they contact about them?
Yeah, I think some of the best ways that they could probably get connected, we have some great opportunities for mentoring and tutoring, and there's some already great existing programs through either CABA or CAFASI, and they provide training for the individuals. And I think that's the biggest piece, is that there's some training that goes through there. There's also through United Way, there's Readers Are Leaders, which is a tutoring program that ties back to the Kenosha Unified Schools, again, providing training to mentors who come into our schools and help our students achieve greater success. And And I think that the big pieces is it's all organized in partnership with those organizations. And then there's training, and they have dedicated classrooms that are assigned with students who we've hand chosen, who need some extra help and maybe just some extra care throughout the school year. And otherwise, if they're just looking to volunteer, if they're a parent, a grandparent, and they just want to be in the classroom, sometimes just starting with your child's teacher or your grandchild's teacher and saying, hey, do you just need some extra help in the classroom? Teachers sometimes have some extra things that they wouldn't mind helping with, you know, or they always have the classroom parties or the various things. That's a great place to start as well.
Bulletin boards.
Yes,
helping
right.
with the bulletin boards. I think that's a big thing.
Cutting okay. things out, all of those yeah. things that teachers, you know, they take home and they do on their own time as well. But a classroom mm-hmm. helper is a valued helper. That is okay. for sure.
And I think most principals would be able to, you know, point you in the right direction if you don't have a particular classroom
sure.
To work in. Okay, so I like to end interviews on a high note. Can each of you tell us something that's happened this summer that made you look forward to the school year?
Yeah, I have a feeling that it may be the same for both of us, just because yesterday Tanya and I were out at Jeffrey Elementary with David Cole. He joined us out there for a while too. And there were two of our custodians who raised funds on their own, entirely on their own, to redo a drop-off spot for our students at Jeffrey Elementary. They worked with the city to get the proper permitting. They worked with the contractor to get the right size cement pad. So our students who were getting dropped off at Jeffrey Elementary would step off into a grass. It was a grassy median or parkway. But when it would rain, or, you know, in the springtime, it would get muddy. Wintertime, it would get snowy. So what they did is they problem solve on their own. And they raised money, petitioned the city, and they put in this landing pad totally on their – they coordinated with our buildings and grounds department. But they did it all on their own. Mm-hmm. And earlier I said one of the things that I've noticed about KUSD has been the incredibly caring staff. And that's just another example of the incredibly caring staff that we have here in Kenosha Unified. And I guess I'm just really excited that they're all coming back. They're all mm-hmm. back and going to be working with our students. And I get to be around them. And see the great work that they're doing. So that's really something that happened over the summer that makes me really excited for the upcoming school year.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, I think I'd piggyback on that. I mean, we pointed it out and we got them some recognition for that. But I think we have everyday staff members who do those kind of things without ever asking for recognition, without ever telling anybody, without, you know, they just go above and beyond to do things extra special for our students because they love our students and they care about our students. And I think just having that happen right before the school year, it was just that warm reminder that that's what thousands of our staff members do every day. And it was just like the perfect kickoff right before all of our teachers came back yesterday. And it's just an awesome way to head right back into the school here. So,
well, that's great. So my thanks to our guests, Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, Superintendent of Kenosha Unified School District, and Tanya Reuter, who is the KUSD Director of Communications. You've been listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Unified School District's back-to-school information for 2023 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you so much, both of you, for being my guests today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
On Saturday morning, September 9th at 11:15, join us for the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast of The Cane Shadow, The Library Mystery. Broadcasting from the Kenosha Southwest Neighborhood Library, the Radio Theater, Saturday morning, September 9th at 11:15.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Mount Pleasant Police Department has seats available in its 2020